You're listening to a Media Snackers podcast. Check us out at mediasnackers.com.
I'm Milton Chen. I'm the executive director at the George Lucas Educational Foundation. We're a media-making nonprofit organization based in the San Francisco Bay Area, and we make media to try to show what the future of learning should look like.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you with us, Milton, so thank you for giving up your time. Let's get straight into this. For the people who live under a rock, I know you give it a little bit there. Just flesh it out. What do you guys actually do?
We make media as an organization, a nonprofit founded by George Lucas. We especially make films and supporting media, articles, magazines, and especially our website, edutopia.org, to, as we say, document and disseminate what 21st century learning looks like. So these are classrooms around the U.S. and increasingly around the world that are using technology to connect people up, as we're talking today, and also to do things such as project-based learning rather than textbook-based learning, and cooperative learning, where students work together in groups and communicate around larger projects rather than each student working solely and individually and in an isolated way on their own.
And I've got a question to ask you. I actually jumped on Twitter and tweeted out that I was going to be speaking to you and asked some people to throw some questions. So this is not my question. This is from Dave Intuit. And he asked, what does Edutopia see as the preferred future for education? And how does this differ from the default one?
Well, our preferred future, as you can tell by our name, Edutopia, is a much more ideal learning environment for young people. That is very different from the current organization of schools, certainly here in the U.S., but also we feel around the world, where many of the models and thinking about schooling come from as long ago as 100 years or more. The idea of a school building that is isolated from the community, without connections to the rest of the community and the rest of the world. We think it's a very exciting time to be a student. If they're given the right tools and experiences that can enable them to follow their own passions for learning, a curriculum that is built around real projects, authentic projects of interest to students. Sorry, my phone's ringing.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, we'll just let it ring. So yes, where students can engage in projects and problems of interest to them. So I would maintain that you could take just about any topic that a student would say they're interested in, whether it's sports, as many are interested in sports, or music, or the environment, and build an entire curriculum around that that would range across the sciences and math, as well as history and the humanities. So we've got a long way to go to realize this preferred future, but we are beginning to see examples of that in the schools, again, around the U.S. and around the world.
And tell us a little bit about then the Digital Generation Project, because I think this segues quite nicely into that discussion. And tell us a little bit about what it is and why you guys have done it.
One of the amazing things about what's going on globally these days is the pace of change and the pace of the way in which new media are being embraced by young people, which of course continues a generational change where every new medium has been embraced by the youth of that time, whether it's television, say, 50 years ago, or whether it's technology and the internet and digital media today. So with all this talk about digital natives, digital immigrants being the older generation, the way in which young people these days have been born digital for more than 10 or 15 years now, young people have never known a record player. I remember playing records. Young people have never known a typewriter. And I remember typing papers in college. So we felt it was important to show what these young people are doing with media in their lives, in their learning styles and their lifestyles inside and outside of school. So with support from the MacArthur Foundation in Chicago as part of their digital media and learning initiative, we've created 10 multimedia profiles of digital youth, as we call them, on our website at edutopia.org. They are 10 American kids. We'd like to extend this to kids around the world, but we thought we'd start with 10 kids here in this country. And there are only 10 kids, and they range across all sorts of different levels of use, kinds of use, backgrounds of the kids. They are ages 9 to 18. They come from cities. They come from suburbs. They come from small towns. If you go to edutopia.org, you can see examples of, you know, we were just looking at Cameron yesterday. He's 11 years old from a town in Indiana. He's a hockey player and has used digital media, especially visual effects, to study his own performance as a hockey player. He videotapes himself taking shots in hockey to improve his own performance. He's a musician and has done a number of creative things with showcasing how he performs music. So it's just one example, and one of my favorites is Luis from Oregon, because he's a kid who did not have much access to technology when he was younger. He got his first computer about 4 years ago when he was 14. He's now about 18, but he's been able to use technology through experiences such as an out-of-school program called 4-H Tech Wizards. 4-H is a national and may well be an international program that involves kids in all sorts of activities outside of school, and they have a program called Tech Wizards where he's able to support his own city in taking an inventory of the trees on city property. They use GPS devices, they take photographs, and have been trained by arborists to evaluate trees. So it's an example of citizen science, and he's been able to really teach others, younger kids, as well as adults, about the use of technology.
Not just a couple of examples you're talking through there. I've been on the site. It is cool. I'm sure my listeners will check it out. It's a very pro kind of social attitude towards the use of technologies and online mediums. What do you think are the barriers there that exist currently within education that kind of, you know, stop this use, really? Is it institutional? Is it individual? What are the barriers that you are seeing and trying to overcome?
Well, certainly here in the U.S., we see many kinds of barriers that are mainly institutional and historical and somewhat political. I think one of the reasons why it's difficult to change a large enterprise like education, it's very similar, in fact, to our efforts to change healthcare in this country. This is a very large industry, even though education schools generally have an impression that they are somehow underfunded and impoverished. In fact, the K-12 enterprise in this country is close to a $500 billion enterprise. It employs a tremendous number of people, both as teachers and as support staff, administrators throughout the system. There are 3 million K-12 teachers in the U.S. alone. So there's a lot at stake when it comes to changing this system. So we constantly encounter barriers that relate to finances, not just more money, but how current funds are spent, regulations. Education in this country is very highly regulated. I wish I could show you through a visual the size of the California Education Code, which would occupy several very heavy phone books. But most importantly, I do believe that all people within the system do value student learning. At least they say they do in every conversation about educational change, whether it's school board members, state legislators, teachers, parents, everyone is in this business because they want to see students learn. So I like to say that the hardest thing to change in education is our minds, changing our thinking about what education should be like, look like, how it should be organized. So that's our role. We're trying to very specifically show how schools can change, because we profile schools and out-of-school programs that exist already. They're not hypothetical. They involve real students, real teachers, real resources. So we do believe change is possible if more people understood this preferred future, as you mentioned. Not everyone agrees about what the preferred future should be. When you say, you know, 21st century schools, a lot of people have very different ideas of what that should be. So we're trying to state our case for things such as project-based learning, technology integration, and generally giving students more responsibility for their own learning and more choice in how they learn and what they learn.
Brilliant. Just want to wrap up this podcast interview with a kind of a future question, if you like. Tell us a little bit about Edutopia's future projects on the go, if you can, or just future direction and what your hopes are for it.
Well, we're striking out a couple new directions. One of them is based partly in response to feedback from our own users to our website at edutopia.org. People are asking us many more specific questions about how to achieve this kind of change. maybe 5 years ago, when we would show a school doing project-based learning, people would look at that and say, oh, well, that's interesting. That's a whole new way of organizing the curriculum. And now the tone has shifted where people are saying more they'd like to try project-based learning, not just awareness, but actual implementation. So they're asking us, what's the curriculum? How long does it take? What kind of technology is used? How does it integrate across subject areas? What's the professional development needed for teachers? So we are also focusing more attention on how to help the adult educators, as you are also focusing on the adult stakeholders and gatekeepers for the experiences of youth. So we're going much more specifically into what we call model schools, case studies of model schools, and starting this fall in October, you'll see on our site much more specific case studies that involve maybe an hour's worth of documentary film about these schools and in-depth interviews with teachers and students. So that's one area where we're striking out in. And we're also launching online community on our site, in part, again, to response from people saying they'd love to talk to each other, not just take content from our website or from our magazine, but then share that amongst a community organized by interest, or maybe by grade level, or maybe by geography. And maybe there's a group of teachers in Wales that would like to have a conversation related to some of the content they've seen on our side, or content coming from Media Snackers. So we're trying to enable those kinds of online conversations. We'll be related to these model schools, having teachers, for instance, from the Yes Preps group of schools in Houston. They'll be online and be able to talk with folks who are seeing what they do.
Brilliant. Well, Milton Chan, thank you for giving up your time to speak to Media Snackers. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, DK. It's MC signing off.
You're listening to a Media Snackers podcast. Check us out at mediasnackers.com.